Thank you very much, Tanya. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the BC Members Call taking place on the 30th of November 2012. On the call today, we have Lanre Ajayi, Janet O'Callaghan, Elizabeth Sweezy, Susan Kawaguchi, Andy Abrams, Yvette Miller, Philip Corwin, Mark Sloan, Bill Smith, Ron Andrus, Anjali Hansen, Steve Del Bianco, Marie Patullo, Camille Stewart, Bryce Cowlin, Gabriela Slack, and Marilyn Cade. And we have apologies from Lynn Gudendorf, Olga Yagas, and Martin Sutton, and John Berard. Thank you, Marilyn, and over to you.
Thank you, Benny. And I really appreciate that everybody is joining what is a interim discussion call. And I just want us to all understand that is what we're not dealing with the broader issues, but we have a few priorities, and this call is trying to address some of the priority issues. So there will be another call that I think probably Steve will be chairing, since I'll be in Dubai for the next 2 weeks. I just want to try to deal with the priority issues related to the RPM, address ATRT. I heard you just say that John is not on the call for the ATRT. Is that right?
Marilyn, John Berard, this is Steve. John Berard had conveyed his status earlier this week. He's on a panel right now in New York City.
Okay, I did have a call with John to talk about the ATRT. I'll come back to that. I think the priority issue, as far as I can tell, that we need to focus this call on is the discussion on the RPM. Steve, do you and Alisa think that's right?
Yes, and if it's convenient, people could use the report card as a guide, and everyone who participated could talk about and answer questions from members about where we go next.
Right, and if I could just turn the RPM discussion over to you to lead, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
You and Alisa, I was there, but I think you and Alisa are maybe we could use the report card as the basis of the discussion for at least the next 20 minutes. Is that okay?
Fine by me. Lisa, do we have you on the call yet?
Yes, I'm here.
Fantastic.
So, Steve, just kick this off. It's Marilyn. If I can just kick this off. The business constituency led the creation of ideas on improvements to the RPMs. The RPMs were not satisfactory, and we developed an improvements document, and then led to a consensus document with the IPC endorsed by the ISC on some extent. You and Alisa did a great report card on what we got and what we didn't get. And if we could just focus on what we got and what we didn't get, and then think about the strategy for moving forward, because the reality is going to be, I think, a grassroots reality, if I can say that. But I'm going to turn to you and Alisa.
Hey, thanks, Marilyn. Okay, so for folks on the call, we circulated a one-page report card on the 8 RPM improvements, and that report card included notes from the last call with Fadi Shahadi and staff, but it also included a detailed description on this limited preventative registrations, which is item 4 on our report card. All of you are probably very familiar with the 8 items, so I thought that it would be helpful for Lisa and I. We could walk through how we came up with the grading on that report card, and on each one we'll stop and answer questions from members of the BC on the status and where we go next. So the first item on that report card was to extend this sunrise period from 30 to 60 days and to use a standardized process that would work the same across all the TLDs. So we have given ourselves a B-plus on that particular item because Fadi agreed that we ought to, in the straw man, extend a 30-day advance notice period. Not quite the same thing as a 60-day sunrise, but it accomplishes pretty much what we needed in terms of lead time. So there'd be a 30-day advance notice period before each GTLD starts its sunrise. And better still is that Fadi himself declared that, quote, this falls clearly into the realm of implementation, quote, taking it sort of off the table from making it a PDP or policy matter. And this straw man that I keep speaking of is a document that Fadi and staff put together, which they are endeavoring to put out for public comment. And it's meant to include proposals, and you'll see in this list of report card items that a few of the proposals are being considered implementation. I know that the public comment period could still show pushback from opponents of any of these measures who would claim that it wasn't implementation but rather should be sent back for policy. We know that's coming, and there have already been objections like that lodged by John Nevitt. So it's no slam dunk that just because something is in the straw man as implementation, there's no slam dunk that it will get through. But at least it has the backing of a chief executive of the company who at this point is trying to put his stamp on the new GTLD program and make it all about implementational excellence. I would say that Fadi's main priority is getting the clearinghouse up and running in January so that registrations can begin, and he is clearly focused on operational deliverables and meeting deadlines right now. So I think if he puts something in the straw man, it has the likelihood of getting implemented, since I think a lot of staff is going along with that. So I'll stop there. Lisa, Marilyn, Bryce, all of you who are participating, anybody want to add anything to that or take questions?
This is Elisa. Along with adding the 30-day notice, Fadi also made a commitment to developing a portal that would clearly define all of the registry launch dates, all of the eligibility requirements, all of those things that I think a lot of brand owners are very concerned about in terms of knowing whether or not they can actually meet the requirements, when the sunrise starts, when it stops, all that. So it wasn't something that we had asked for specifically, but it came up in conversation and something that he said he's committed to doing.
So everyone's clear, during the sunrise, registrants would only be able to do a sunrise preemptive registration, their exact matches, plus substitutions for things like a space, a dash, ampersand, and they, of course, would be paying for these. You'd be paying whatever price the registry wants to charge during the sunrise. So it... our main objective was, for this one, our main objective was to have a longer period of time. Go ahead, Elisa.
I was just going to add, but as a baseline, registrants must meet the basic eligibility requirements for that registry. So they must first meet, in order to qualify for Sunrise registration, you must first meet the eligibility requirements of the registry, and then if you have the matching trademark, you would be eligible.
And, Elisa, isn't the requirement to earn a sunrise, ICANN is also saying to earn that, you must also have proof of use of the trademark.
Not
yet.
Well,
that's correct.
Elisa, it's Marilyn. We need to really discuss what proof of use means because, you know, proof of use is really different from in the U.S. than it is in Europe, for instance.
Yeah, so they have given some examples of what proof of use are, and I believe that actually went out for public comment when they were asking about the matching criteria. So they've given examples of what would be considered proof of use, like packaging, data sheets, collateral. They've given some examples of what would not qualify, and those were things like business cards. So they have given examples of what that would be.
And Elisa, it's Marilyn. I think we need to be really careful about this This is a really important reflection from a business constituency that is not just about U.S.-centric positions.
The document they've circulated for comment said that there are two things, as Elisa just described. You have to have a signed declaration that you're using it, and at least a single sample showing that you currently are using it. And they recognize that use requirements vary across jurisdictions, quote, however, consistent procedures and rules must be applied by the clearinghouse regardless of the jurisdiction where the trademark was issued, quote. So ICANN is saying, I don't care about your multiple jurisdictions for use. We have two criteria. You have to declare that you're using it and give us a single sample of current use.
And Steve, it's Marilyn. I just want to be I just want to mark something for us to come back to for you and Elisa. Later, we're going to talk about public comment on the improvements. So can I just hold on other comments on that?
Any other questions from BC members on the Sunrise?
Steve, Chris here.
Go ahead.
Chris, sorry.
Thanks.
So, Steve, can I just summarize the difference between what you're providing, it's Marilyn, what you're providing is the difference between what was discussed on Sunrise and what FADI is now proposing, which is a two-phase approach on Sunrise, right? And
That is the only difference. That is correct, and we got into the proof of use as a reminder to people that you must satisfy the proof of use to be able to get a Sunrise. We also clarified that it's exact matches only with the dash, ampersand, and plus.
But I think we need to be really careful also to understand the 30 days portal, the 30 days notice, the requirement of a 30 days notice and a 30 days of a and then a special portal that he committed to. So those are, we can't lose sight of that. So whatever other comments we take, can we come back to how they affect those three aspects?
Okay, go ahead, Chris.
Steve, there's a point that I've been thinking about a few times and slightly off the side, but imagine I'm a small hotel called Apple, and I've got a trademark for my hotel in Ireland, let's say. It doesn't really matter. Now, I'm not interested in defending that brand worldwide. I would just want to be able to register apple.hotel when it becomes available and do so in Sunrise. Now, if I've got to go into the clearinghouse, my brand is then sending notices out through the system when anybody tries to register Apple in the second level. And I'm just wondering whether there's any virtue in not having it to be mandatory that we're sending out notices for somebody who just wants to register in Sunrise. Or there should be an option to, like the old system, where you could register in Sunrise on a piecemeal basis, but not go in necessarily into the trademark clearinghouse.
I'm sorry. I need to respond to this, Steve. Chris, do you have a conflict of interest on such a comment?
A conflict of interest?
Well, I just need to understand. It's Marilyn. I need to understand. Is this hypothetical, or a real question?
It's more hypothetical.
Fantastic. So we can deal with hypotheticals, but you know we only have an hour to call. Could we park the hypothetical, really important questions, and maybe Steve could gather those to deal with?
Okay.
Yeah, happy to do that, Chris. It's a great question to say whether I want to do Sunrise participation, but I don't necessarily want to generate trademark claims and notices. Do I have a choice? That's the answer to your question.
Yeah.
Any other member questions or comments on report card item one?
And Steve, I think this is a great gathering of examples. I don't want them to be – they're examples, right? What Chris just gave us was a good example. I thought it was really fantastic, but we're going to have to take that up. Is that okay?
That's right, and I'm asking if other members have other questions that I should note now. And if not, hearing none, we'll move on to number two. Number two was to extend the claims notices indefinitely instead of shutting them down on day 61 and to make sure that the claims notices are easy to use, secure, and stable. We give a grade C on that because the straw man proposal extends it from 60 days to 90 days as an implementation change. But Fadi said, quote, making claims permanent would be a policy change, not an implementation item, end quote. So we asked for indefinite. We couldn't understand why you wouldn't always do claims notices. And Fadi said that going from 60 to 90 is fine. So that's a minimal improvement. The straw man also created a claims to process. And I would really look for Elisa and Bryce and those of you that were in the room and Marilyn on that Thursday to explain the sort of the genesis of how we came up with the claims to. But before you do that, I'll simply explain to the members on the call that the claims to is a proposal where for a period of, say, 6 to 12 months after the 90 days, TLDs, operators, registries, would have the option of making a lightweight notice about trademark claims. So it wouldn't necessarily identify the sort of chilling effect language. It would have to be softer language. And that notice would give into registrants, but only on exact matches, and only if the trademark owner paid an additional fee to have those soft notices for another 6 to 12 months. And many members of the BC and IPC are not very enthusiastic about the claims, too, the notion of having a weak notice that you have to pay for only 6 to 12 months. We didn't want to create the impression that that was an adequate substitute for having the strong notice indefinitely. And I'll stop there and take a cue. Elisa, Bryce, anything to add? Marilyn?
It's Marilyn. I'm going to wait for Martin and others to comment on this. If I can, is that okay?
It's
Bryce.
Elisa.
Go ahead, Elisa.
Well, I think initially I heard about it. I wasn't on that call when it was first brought up as a possibility. I think when I initially heard about it, I thought maybe that was a good thing. And after some additional thinking and speaking with others, I actually don't see great benefit in the claims, in this additional service that's being offered. Brand owners are going to have to pay for it. Two, we don't know the cost yet, so it's really hard to say. But I'm actually not that excited by it. I think also the fact that the language is much softer and possibly couldn't be used in support of, further UDRP filings or in litigation, like all of that I find problematic. And for those reasons, I'm not really that excited about it.
So, it's Marilyn. Can I just, I think Jerry's on the call and others. The BC had put forward certain, I just think everybody on the call needs to understand that the BC, I wrote the initial draft of improvements to go to the so the BC wrote the initial draft and went to the IPC, and Elisa and others drove our ability to have changes. The 8 points were already a compromise for us. But understanding what the implications of how those 8 points are implicated and energized and implemented, big deal. And so Elisa's just identified, Elisa, if you don't mind my saying this, you just identified here's an idea, but the way we implement it is really, really potentially difficult for the VC.
Let's take a cue. Anyone else want to speak to number two?
This is Bryce. I mean, I completely agree with all of the comments that have been made so far. But I would say the flip side of that is that depending on how it's implemented, it actually could be a tool that is useful to brand owners. So I'm not sure. I mean, I think it's just a matter of wordsmithing it a little bit, but I'm not sure if it's necessarily coming up, you know, sort of against it so much as sort of reserving our opinion a little bit about it, depending on what some of these details that Elisa has raised, you know, turn out to be, like price, like what the language of the notice is. I mean, those are really important details.
Bryce, let me ask you a question. If we were satisfied with the price and we thought the notice was sufficiently strong to be helpful, well, then if it ended after 12 months, we wouldn't be happy with it. I mean, if it's working, why would we ever shut it down so that registrants no longer get the benefit of the warning? And wouldn't we still have a concern that it was simply optional on the part of a TLD registry?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that was brought up at the meeting, and I'm not endorsing this position at all, but I think one of the ideas was that if you are building a system, if the registrars are building a system where they're going to have to put this into place for a period of at least 12 months, then that's going to be a longer-term, robust sort of system that then, and also, by the way, if they're charging for it, that it actually might create an opportunity in the marketplace.
Got it. Even it might keep it running if the fees they were charging covered their costs, right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay, it's Marilyn. Steve, can I get in the queue?
Bryce, did you have anything more?
And just to clarify, that last comment was not my personal view. I was just responding to, you know, your question about where that sort of came about, and that was where it came about, mostly from the registrar side of the table and registry side of the table.
Great. Thank you. Marilyn, go ahead.
I think we have to be really, really cautious, and I'm going to be, I'm not really happy to hear Body talked in the meeting I was in about market opportunity for the registries and market opportunity for the registrars and market opportunity, blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. I have to tell you guys, you know, my personal view is there are providers of services that do include the some parties in the business constituency, but the vast, I think we got to be really careful that we're not focused on what the market opportunities are. ICANN needs to, the business constituency thinks, if you go look at our model and our charter, we think that we're not about creating market opportunities. We're trying to create an environment that is sound and stable to protect your interest as businesses within the ICANN broader portfolio. And I'm just really concerned. I sat through 2 days in L.A., and 30-40% of the discussions had to do with how people create business opportunities out of the role and functions that ICANN is responsible for. And I got to say, I'm really concerned about that.
Thanks, Marilyn. Let's move on to number three. Number three was to complete the URS. uniform rapid suspension as a low-cost alternative and to improve its usefulness. We even added the point that, if necessary, ICANN could underwrite for an initial period. The grade on this one is incomplete because, as Fadi keeps saying, that was pushed off because it will be worked on, I guess, next week is when he will begin attacking the URS with the same kind of vigor that he put into the trademark clearinghouse. But he clearly wanted to first get the clearinghouse in order. So that's an incomplete item. We're going to need to work on that very hard to make sure that URS is useful and affordable as a means of taking down domain registrations that are abusively registered or used. Is there anyone who wants to add anything to URS? Take a cue.
Only
Marilyn,
that,
anything else?
Only that Fadi will be in. Fadi is returning from
Dubai.
So he won't be able to focus on this for a few days.
Are you in Dubai now, Marilyn?
I am.
So I imagine we've caught you at a really tough time and a lot of jet lag as well.
Not yet.
Okay, anyone else have a question on URS? Great, let's go to number four. Four on the report card was to implement a new mechanism where a trademark owner could prevent a second-level registration of a mark. And we had said for exact matches or for strings that have been abusively registered or used. And we felt that this mechanism, sometimes referred to as blocking, would work across all registries upon payment of a fee, and there would need to be safeguards, of course, if a registrant had a legitimate right, and he should not be blocked for the use of a trademark term that they were using legitimately. Now, we don't like to call it blocking, and we have worked very hard to come up with a preventative registration, limited preventative registration, and I attached to the report card a two-page description. It was led mainly by the IPC, but BC members contributed to it, on how this might work. Fadi has resisted this one strongly, so I gave it a grade of F so far. We have failed on this one because it's not in the straw man proposal that Fadi advanced on the Monday call. And he said, quote, because any concept of blocking was removed from the straw man for lack of consensus at the November 16th meeting in Los Angeles, implying that if there was not consensus, he didn't put it in. But on the 26th call, which was Monday of this week, we had quite a bit of pushback on him on that. So he added, okay, fine, I'll put it back in the straw man document, but only for purposes of continued discussion. He did not suggest that he would put it in for purposes of implementing it, but only for discussion. As a follow-up to that, the BC and IPC circulated that LPR document that's the last two pages of the report card. We haven't seen much in the way of reaction to that. And Fadi did not yet put out for public comment his straw man, and nor has he sent a request for guidance to the GNSO Council, which he also promised to do. So there's been some delays, and it might have to be with Fadi traveling to Dubai for the wicket. But staff, you would have thought, would have followed through on that. For instance, there was supposed to be a call this morning to discuss the IBM contract on running the service bureau for the Trademark Clearinghouse, but that's been deferred and might potentially be as late as December the 11th. So I'll stop there and give a chance for comments and questions from others on item four. Take a cue.
Steve, this is Ron. I'd like to be in the queue, please.
Ron, go ahead.
Thank you. This is certainly disconcerting. The issue, if you look at these 8 points, and they're all very important points, the fact that second level is where a lot of this damage is going to get done, and it's going to really impact businesses and large. It's very frustrating to see that there was no consensus. Can you expand a little bit about that? Like, where is the, or can someone who was there, I'm sorry, for that particular part of the meeting, expand on where is the blockage? Who's putting up a fight on this one? And is there a battle that can be won here in this short time we have ahead of us? Thank you.
Bryce and Elisa, can you help us with that?
Steve, is John on the call?
No, we've discussed that. John's not on the call. Bryce or Elisa, can you help us?
I mean, I can say that I think the resistance to this particular issue came from a few different places. I think, number one, the non-commercial folks were very visibly upset about this particular issue. And then they were joined in that really by both the registrars and the registries, I would say. Part of the reason for that, I mean, part of the reason that they express their concern with this is they are worried that it is overly broad in the sense that if, you know, a trademark owner can go in and say they have a, you know, say they have a trademark, they can block it, have a limited preventative registration across all of the TLDs, that might give them a greater right than they would otherwise have by virtue of their trademark. So, for example, you know, if someone, you know, was registering a domain name with a particular word, but by virtue of whatever the TLD was, it actually gave that second level a different meaning or a slightly different connotation, that could really impact, you know, free speech and the ability for people to engage in other businesses, and they just felt like it was overly broad, I think, is bottom line.
I'm going to intervene, Ms. Marilyn. You know, Bryce has given a very clear description of the statement, but the reality is there was no real, and Bryce, I need you and others to come back and comment on this, as Marilyn. That is what they said, but they did not present factual realities and factual statements. But I think we need to be very careful not to let narrow aspects, Steve, on, we have eight elements, right? And we got to focus on what are the priorities. And so could you just take us back to what the priorities are for those eight elements? Because we're going to run out of time on this.
Any other comments on this blocking or LPR? Good. We'll move on to number five. Number five on our list of eight was to validate contact information for registrants using Whois. The grade on that is incomplete. That was sort of taken off the table of the straw man item because it's part of the general discussion of Whois accuracy that's wrapped up in the Registrar Accreditation Agreement Amendments discussion. And that work was also deferred so that Fadi could focus everyone on items that were on the critical path of lighting up the trademark clearinghouse, because this would not be a trademark clearinghouse item. So the BC feels strongly will continue to work on number five. That's incomplete as of now. The same thing is true on number six. Number six on our list was that all registrars who were going to sell new GTLD domain names would have to adhere to an amended RAA across the board. We've continued to assist on that for over 2 years now, but that one, again, is being deferred as part of the RAA negotiation. Number seven on our list was to enforce compliance of any registry commitment for regular applications. So the GAC early warnings went out earlier this week. And if an applicant meets with a particular GAC member and tries to assuage their concerns for registrant verification or assuage their concerns over exclusionary practices, those promises need to not only update their application, but they need to be enforceable ICANN. And the only way that works is if they make their way into the registry contract. So the BC has been the leader on this point to say that any material promises have to make their way into an enforceable registry contract with ICANN. Not too many people disagree with us on this, and the GAC has stood tall with us on it. This is a grade of incomplete because it's not part of the straw man, but I'm confident we'll continue to work on this one. Now, finally, number eight. This is a fascinating one here. We had said that the trademark claim notices, the service itself should cover at least strings that were previously found to be abusively registered or used. So that if PayPal, I think Bill Smith's on the phone, one of his best examples is PAYPA number one, which looks like PayPal, but is not PayPal. It's not one of his trademarks, but it's used effectively in phishing attacks to entice people to give up their PayPal ID and password. And that's real money when that happens. That's fraud. So if PayPal had recovered PAYPA1 in a previous UDRP or court case, on the basis that it was abusively registered or used. We would have wanted PayPal to be able to allow that string, in addition to its trademark string, and to issue trademark claims warnings to registrants. It doesn't block the registration. It would be a warning so that if somebody tried to register PAY, PA1 in any new TLD, they would get a warning saying that this string was previously adjudicated to be abusively registered or used, might even indicate where it happened, and that kind of a warning is supposed to have a chilling effect on the registrant. So let's give this a grade of B-, because the straw man document prepared by Foddy and staff considers this as an implementation item, which we were all quite pleased with. But Foddy went on to say that, quote, I will seek guidance from GNSO counsel before proceeding with implementation on it. The way that the proposal in the straw man would read is that each trademark clearinghouse registration, which is to say each trademark that makes its way in, could add up to 50 variant domains on that. So, for instance, Bill Smith's company would register PayPal, for which they have a trademark, but they'd also get 50 other variant strings on that that have been previously abusively registered or used. There would be an additional annual fee for Bill to have that in the database, and Foddy claimed that working with their vendors, Deloitte and IBM, they felt they could get that fee down to single digits, so let's call it $10 a year for each of the 50 extra strings, and that it would trigger trademark claims. But I've put in parentheses here that we're not sure how long those claim notices would run. Would they run only in the claims two period of 6 to 12 months, or would they run permanently? And I think that's a fundamental concern or distinction on this one. If we do get a letter from Foddy asking counsel for guidance, we can expect a very lively discussion on the counsel mail list, as well as a discussion at the counsel's meeting on teleconference meeting on December the 20th on that. Some of the registries have already come out against this being an implementation item, and, of course, the NCSG is objected to it as well. I'll stop there and take a cue, and this, again, is the final of our eight items on the report card.
Steve, before you take the cue, it's Marilyn, can I just say I want the members on the call, you know, this is being transcribed, but Steve has just done a phenomenal summary of issues that are before us, but we're going to take your comments, and Steve, if it's okay, you and Elisa will be then driving forward on what BC members are saying, because we are going to have body moving forward on public comments. So we're going to listen today, but then if I could ask you and Elisa, right, you're going to take all of the comments going forward. Is that? And one of the things we need to understand is individual companies are going probably need to provide their views on some of the issues. We won't go into great detail on that today, but you and Elisa would come back to them. Is that okay?
That's a great point, everyone. The business constituency, of course, would file a comment if they ask for public comments, and the BC would be active on council if Foddy asks council, as he said he would. But that will be of limited effect if we're not also getting backing from the companies that are BC members or even friends of BC members, because individual companies filing comments will definitely add an echo chamber to our concerns on this. So when the time comes for those comments, we'll do our best to coordinate talking points and distribute them to all of you in the hopes that you can put it in your own words and file comments on your own behalf. Who else wants to be in the queue on number 8 or any other comments on the report card?
This is Susan. I'd like to be in the queue.
This is Bill. I would as well.
Great. So Susan Kawaguchi of Facebook, you're up.
So in the call on Monday, you know, I listened in to Foddy's call, and I was really concerned. The same topic that Marilyn brought up a few moments ago about Foddy, you know, he keeps pounding on the industry creating market services to solve these problems. What I would have said to him if it wasn't such a big, you know, large call was, you know, where are all those services in the last 12 to 15 years? they're not there because the market services, the registrars and registries have created have been focused at the domainers or cyber squatters. So I think there's a mindset there that we really need to educate Foddy and make him think about this a little differently. Also, I was really concerned about his comment about the using the UDRPs and the and litigation as the criteria for the preventative list. You know, he sort of made this quick comment about, oh, you know, 99% of the companies will not have 50 to list in the trademark clearinghouse, which I think is very naive on his point of view. So I think we need to maybe come up with some statistics that shows him at a very brief glance, you know, there are 1,000 companies out there that will have more than 50, and that's just, you know, a very quick look at this. So maybe those are the type of things if we have an opportunity to comment, that we add those two elements in.
Great. I've got that written down, Susan. May I ask if you're one of the most organized folks when it comes to this, would you be able to come up with a list of the strings that Facebook would want to put in? And so that share it.
Yeah.
This is
Steve, it's Marilyn. Actually, Elisa is going to, I think, own driving some examples on putting Facebook and various other. If we could just move forward with, but Susan just raised a really, really serious concern, and I need to make sure that everybody understands. I didn't have any expectations of the actually, that's not true. I've been given a different expectation of the interactions with business going forward. And maybe, Steve, after you go through this really important identification of our concerns, we could come back to what are we going to say to ICANN and Foddy about why business needs to why they need to understand and work with business. Could just come back to that at the end of your call at this section?
Great. Thanks, Susan. So, Elisa, before we move to Bill Smith, Elisa, what's your understanding of the exercise we're going to do to build the statistics on these adjudicated strings? Just picking up on what Marilyn said.
I can do some research and look at, you know, UDRP filings and the number of names listed on the filings and try to do that. But I think it would be great if, Susan, if you have some of those statistics for your brand that we could share. I mean, the more the better.
Right. And maybe this is where we get INCA involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we could come out with, you know, I mean, we need to be very careful about this because what we don't want to do is scare them off from offering this service. So, you know, if we come up with 10,000 companies that want 50, that's going to, you know, Foddy right now, maybe he's playing this to the registries and registrars and saying, you know, oh, this is very few are going to be doing it with the clear, and maybe with a clear understanding that maybe he's wrong. But he can make that statement. I don't know if he would
Susan, it's Marilyn. This call is being transcribed, but I'm going to be indiscreet and tell you, do not assume he understands. You know, I'm trying to think about how I say this.
I think I understand you. So what I think we should, you know, I mean, we should think about this a little harder about what we want to provide, what information we want to provide. Maybe we want to keep that close to the vest. Maybe we want to make a big point. But I think we could quickly get companies that are involved with INTA. Maybe INTA could do a quick survey and you know, something on that line to say, no, 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 this is a big problem, and you're still not addressing it fully with the 50. So,
this is Bryce. I'd like to get in the queue on this, actually.
Great. Great. So we, the notion of whether 50 is adequate will be helpful, but I believe that's something we want to hold back a little bit longer. It's more important for us to establish the need for this, and then when the time comes on figuring out the specifics, we'd be able to create data showing that 50 isn't adequate. And again, if there's going to be a fee in the single digits for each string, I don't know why.
Right.
It would matter at all whether the number was 50 for you, it was 75 for Facebook, it was 112 for PayPal. Why would it matter at all? So we'll make that argument, I think, at the right time, but it's essential to have a handful of examples of companies that have more than 50. That would be so useful. Is there anyone else on the BC call right now that could volunteer, like Susan, to quickly do a count of how many strings they might want to submit?
Well, I just want to be clear, Steve. I think, Elisa, you volunteered. Is that right? You would agree anyone who wanted to give you examples, they could come to you? And we could put together a sort of a quick listing. I have input from it's Marilyn. I have input from AIM. We could send that all to you so Steve and Lisa could gather examples of why 50 is not right. Is that okay?
Yeah, that sounds great. And I can coordinate with Steve.
I just asked on the call if any other BC members want to volunteer to give it a shot so that Elisa and I know who to follow up with. That's all. Anybody
else? Steve, this is Andy at Google. I can look to see what strings we would enter.
You're the best. Thanks, Andy. So we have Andy, Susan. I bet I can count on Bill, too, right?
You probably can. Though, actually, I'd ask Susan if she might send an email to Olga copying me asking for this.
I'm just going to brainstorm here. I think Verizon and AT&T, but the point is, Steve, you know, we'll get like, I think this is, we'll get our, also our Canadian allies, but the point is they're going to go to Elisa for input. Is that
Marilyn, that's fine. We'll take care of it with routing. Don't worry yourself over that. But it's important for the companies on the call and folks like Marie, who have access to multiple companies in the European vein, to try to generate the data we need. That's all we wanted to do.
And we
great.
Can probably
I'll
Bill
help
Smith.
You with
we,
that endeavor.
Great. And Bill
Susan
Smith,
also,
PayPal, you're in the queue, and then Bryce.
Okay. So, Susan, I just quickly on this, Andy from Google, their trademark guy, would probably be somebody roped into this, I think.
Andy
well.
Just volunteered, Bill, a minute ago.
Yep, I'm on it.
Sorry, Andy.
No worries.
Great results.
Trying to pay attention to the call here. It's, okay.
Bill Smith,
so
you're in
I
the
wanna,
queue. Go ahead.
So, all right, I want to second Susan's comments around the number 50. And I think we need to diplomatically find a way to let ICANN know that while it may be true that less than 1% of the registrants will have more than 50 such names, the standard deviation on this is going to be very large. There are going to be a relatively small number of registrants, but PayPal, Google, Facebook, Twitter, a large number of others, will have a very large number that they would like to protect because we've gone through UDRPs, a number of them, and are protecting a very large set of names at this time. And the other thing is, I think Marilyn asked why they should listen to business, why ICANN should listen to business on this, is this is one of those negative externality things again, right? That the domainers, whoever can go out, these names get registered, then they are used for fraudulent purposes. We have to go spend thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, tracking this stuff down and then doing something with the names. And, the math on this adds up literally to billions of dollars if we have to protect all of these things using the current mechanisms. This scheme that ICANN has put together and the community has put together does not scale with the new GTLD program. It is fundamentally flawed in this regard.
Okay, and so while I understand the view that we need more than 50, it strikes me that our first battle will be getting this into the implementation bucket instead of the policy bucket. And only
I agree with you. I'm just going. This is an extremely important.
Got it. So
issue.
Very clear that it's a high priority. It's really an accident number 8 on our list because it's a very high priority for the BC. And we get that, but let me just relay what Fadi said on Monday's call. Quote, GNSO policy requires us not to infringe on the legal rights of others. And he quoted that a few times in the sense that he'd gone back and read what GNSO policy was. And he cited that term as the reason that some things could be implementation and don't require going back in for policy. But what he really confused us is when he got to this, what he called the third bucket, on matching strings, he said, to include domains that were previously abusively registered or used, I'm not comfortable saying that this is implementation. I need to ask counsel for guidance on that question. So it looks as if the first question counsel will deal with is this implementation of previous policies, or is it new policy? And that's a battle we'll have to fight both in public comment and on counsel. And the thing about counsel is getting the votes, one of the biggest challenges we'll have.
Steve?
Bryce, you're next in the queue, Bryce, and then we'll go to Marilyn.
I want you to come to me first. I want to absolutely change the agenda for our call to just make it only about these topics, if you don't mind, Steve.
That's fine.
Marilyn,
by me.
This is Bill. I mind.
Well,
as a point of order,
I just wanted
we
to
have
give
an
you
agenda.
More time.
All right, let's move on, Bryce. We're almost done. We're on number 8 right now. We're at 57 minutes. Let's keep moving. Bryce, go ahead.
I just want to address this number 50 issue because I think there's a little bit of a disconnect about how this would actually work in practice. The way that this was envisioned to work is actually not just 50 labels that would match, and that's it. That's the cap. It would be 50 labels that would per record that you put in the TM clearinghouse. Okay, and it wouldn't be a separate record in the TM clearinghouse. Like you put the UDRP decision in, and that's its own record with whatever strings. And if there's more than 50, then you're out of luck. If you have to have already put in a TM into the clearinghouse, and then you can specify additional labels under that TM. Under that record, in the clearinghouse. So
that's right, Bryce.
Really
I think we understand that, but it still would indicate that if PayPal had more than 50 variants on the word PayPal, they would run into a limit, and Facebook.
Not necessarily, because they can put in more than one TM record into the clearinghouse to mark PayPal. They may have PayPal in class 25 in the U.S. They may have it in class 9 in Europe. Those are two separate records in the TM clearinghouse, and that
really
would be a total of 100.
They
so
could have multiple
issue,
hang 50 so off.
Yes, that is an issue that is undecided at this point. And frankly, the way it is written actually allows that and envisions that. So I don't think we should automatically assume that with that the 50 is a cap per mark. It's a cap per record as it's written right now. And frankly, most brand owners are planning to put in more than one trademark for especially for big name brands. I mean, when you get to the point of talking about brands that are going to be in the plus 50 plus adjudicated string for a particular mark, these are likely to be larger brands. It's very likely that they're going to have more than one record in the TM clearinghouse for a particular mark, just because of jurisdictional issues, class issues. So I'm not really sure. I think there's some room there, and I completely agree that the number one issue is just making sure we get the RPM in the implementation bucket, but I do think that we actually have room, the way it's written now, to address some of the concerns that are, on the table about the number 50.
That's a great insight, Bryce. So we can keep that alive while we're at the same time doing the research to support more than 50. That's a great observation. Thank you. Folks, that winds up the discussion on the report card, and it'd be fine at this point to move to general questions on that or get back to the regular agenda.
Steve, this is Susan. If we have 2 minutes to spare today, which I know we're at the hour, I would like just to give a blurb about the WHO's review team recommendations and the board's actions.
Actually, Susan, that is where I want to go next, but can I just do one thing here? Steve, I want to be really clear for the people on the call, and Vinny will send out the list of who was on the call. I'm trying to think about how I say this. Fadi Chahadi, the new CEO, wants to do the right thing. He's new. And we're doing the best we can, but we are going to have to also say no to him when no is the right answer. Steve, if you don't mind my, you and Elisa, if you don't mind my saying this, you and Elisa are going to help us understand when we should say no and when we should say yes. We're going to close this call off. The who is issues are really important, and I want to go to that topic, but the rest of the topics we haven't discussed, having nothing to do with preparation for the council calls, et cetera, Steve will drive another call on GTLD policy issues, and the rest of the issues we haven't addressed. I think you guys need to understand we're going to have to say yes and no to Fadi. I'm mindful of the fact that the transcript is going to reflect this. You need to advise us where we're yes and where we're no. And in some circumstances, Steve, I think we're going to have to come back and ask members to really come back to us and you on the answer is no, we're not going to accept, or we will. If you don't mind my just parking that and having you come back on that.
That's fine. Susan, why don't we turn to you next on who is review team implementations. And Bill Smith, I know you had an item you wanted to add as well. Susan?
So we've been, we had a call a couple of weeks ago with the board. They or several members of the board and Fadi and Bill, I think, was on that full call. I was actually on vacation and only stayed on for about a half hour. But the board was very, seemed very up and felt like, they gave the attitude was that they were moving forward, going to implement our recommendations. Some were definitely would require PDPs. But when we saw the actual written report, at least myself, I was very disappointed in the results. And they're basically taking the weight of the ESSAC report and giving it more, they're giving it more weight than they're giving the WHO's review team report. They provided a chart which supposedly shows how they're going to implement, but it's not clear at all that any of these things are, any of our recommendations will be actually acted upon, and that, in my opinion, it's going to be status quo until after they've created a expert who is review team or team of some sort to study the need of who is in general, or what is who is and what should it be used for. So to me, we're now taking another step back. Let's wait 3 or 4 years to get something implemented. Let's go through the PDP policy process. And I'm not happy, and most of the WHO is review team members are not happy, but we are no longer a team. So we've decided to take an action where we've asked for clarification from Fadi because he has made this one of his key issues to work on, and the board has also endorsed that. So we've asked for a phone call with FADI to clarify. We're trying to handle this very sensitively. And, I mean, my first reaction would be, you know, FADI, what the hell? This is ridiculous. But we won't say that to him unless he reads this transcript.
Could you share with the BBC?
Wait. It's Maron. Susan?
Mm-hmm.
I want to say three things because it's important for us to have three comments, okay? The business community has had three really, we have had you and Bill and Lynn on the WHOIS group. The WHOIS work, and I think your input is new to us. I just want you to understand your input is new to us. If you can, you and Bill and Lynn can give the business community, the business constituency, a short view on your concerns, I suspect we can affect that. In the meantime,
Marilyn, I'm going to step in there. Susan, would you please share a copy with the BC of whatever letter or request went into FADI? It would be great for us to see that and to be as supportive as we can be. Is there anything else? Marilyn, I'm stepping in now, Marilyn. Just relax. Susan, is there anything else you wanted to add to that, and then we'll go to Bill Smith?
No. I mean, we do have a list of bullet points that we're considering using in the call. We have made a formal request via phone call to Denise Michelle, but we have not created a letter or any written communication. This is
let me just intervene for just a minute.
But I could provide the bullet points, Steve.
That would be great, Susan. I'd appreciate that. And then we'll turn to Bill. Go ahead, Bill.
Wait a minute, Steve. Can I just intervene for a minute? It's Baron. The business constituency probably should be thinking about the larger issues of the integrity, and this is what this is a chair issue. The larger integrity of if the ATRT and the subsequent groups are not satisfied, then I just want you to come back to us if you might.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And that is, you know, how the process works with the ATRTs and how it's worked with the WHOIS review team reports and recommendations, to me, is different. They haven't treated us the same. And that is one of the key questions we're asking process.
It's really important, and the reason I intervened was, you know, we're just struggling right now because we have to create the next ATRT representation, and, you know, these groups are really unique, and you and Bill and Lynn, I just think it's important to understand that we have these groups are really unique, and we need to figure out how we support them.
Got it. Bill Smith, please go ahead.
Sure. So as Susan said, we were on a call with the board. They appeared, as you indicated, rather upbeat about their the resolution that they had passed, but we had no knowledge of what that resolution was or what their actions would be. They did not, I don't believe they in any way tipped their hand as to what the their actions would be, really, other than, you know, they were going to do a two-pronged approach, as I recall, and They told us in general terms, but we heard nothing specific. As Susan mentioned, there was a table that is referenced from the board resolution. That table provides the specific set of actions that ICANN, the corporation, staff will be implementing, is my understanding.
Bill, this is Steve. Are you saying that this two-prong mean do the SSAC prong of reevaluating the purpose of who is, but at the same time implement the review team recommendation?
Well, that is how the board described it, and that actually is what if you read the resolution does indicate that. Okay. I believe those are sort of the facts on the ground. That's what the board told us. That's what the resolution says. That's what the table says. As an independent expert into the review team, I looked at what the resolution said. I read the material, and I was not pleased with the outcome. Let me continue. Not pleased with the outcome. I sent a letter to the chair, the president, and copying, I believe, the chair of the review team. I think that was. The vice chair. So, expressing my displeasure. We had we did some exchanges. These were, I consider them private exchanges. I accepted the responses to my questions/challenges in the sense that I understand what the board is saying. They believe they have addressed the who is review team recommendations. Okay. And I believe that they consider the matter closed. As Susan has pointed out, and as I have pointed out, there appear to be both, I think, process and principle differences between how WHOIS was treated and the ATRT and SSR were treated. And I believe that those issues need to be addressed somehow, and I think that they need to be addressed diplomatically with sensitivity,
right.
But I do think there are some issues.
Bill, may I ask?
The only way we're going to know whether the board, in fact, took decisive action comparable to the ATRT and SSR, where they accepted all of the recommendations, save one with the ATRT for a timing issue. And there wasn't similar language in the who is resolution. So the only way we will know on this is probably, as Susan points out, 2 to 3 years in the future.
Steve, it's Marilyn. As the chair, I want to reemerge, if we could, really, what the purpose of this call was, and then we can take up, if you don't mind, I think we have some really significant discussions that have emerged. Who is one of them, but we got to get back on track because Paul is already. Do you mind if we could say that you could, Steve, if you could. Take up a broader discussion on who is, particularly because we have this new initiative, and if I could just move that into you and I will have a private discussion, the larger issues, and I think this is a really critical issue, frankly. It's related to the discussion we were just having But if we could move who is and Steve and Bill and others who were part of the who is discussions, maybe we could have a particular discussion about that. I'm really concerned that Fadi is moving ahead very quickly on different topics. Let me see if I can move us back to what this call was about. And then if we could ask Steve and others to help us have a couple of other heavily calls that are specific to topics that we're going to have to make decisions about.
That's fine with me then. Go ahead. We have 14 more minutes, Marilyn, so please dive into what else you wanted to cover.
I actually think we've identified stuff, Steve, that we can't discuss on this call. We have to have you and Elisa lead a discussion on a couple of topics, if that's okay with you. For today, and I just want to open the call to anything that members want to talk about, but I'm thinking we're going to have a couple of additional calls, Steve, that you and Elisa would lead in the next 2 weeks, if that's okay with you.
It is, but let's move on to the rest of the agenda, please.
So let me just open this up to what haven't we discussed that is there anything let me think about this, okay? You guys might need to think about next 2 weeks.
Right. I circulated a policy calendar to everyone that indicates some of the things that are going to show up on the GNSO Council meeting on December the 20th. The agenda is not posted, and only one motion is posted for that. So we don't have any counselors on the call, so we didn't feel it was particularly useful to deep dive on that. Suffice to say that there will be quite a bit of discussion on what to do about Red Cross and the Olympics second-level protections in this round. And overlaid on that is an action that the board new GTLD committee took just 2 days ago about expanding that protection initiative to include these intergovernmental organizations, roughly 30 things like UNESCO and WIPO that want similar protections to Red Cross and Olympics. So we have the GTLD committee suggesting that the board wants to make that happen, but there was also a motion to recommend protections as a PDP in the council, and those are sort of clashing. They have the same objective in mind, but they're dramatically different ways to get it done. So I'll wait and see what motions have been noticed for voting, and I will let all of you know before the December 20th council call so that we can give our counselors the best guidance as to how to vote and how to discuss those items on that call.
I think that's fantastic, and maybe we just close this call and do the rest of the work online, Steve?
That's right. I think that's best for you and for everyone. So any other closing comments from BC members on the call? Great. Thank you all for your patience and for reviewing the documents we sent out. Look forward to getting those follow-up items, all of you. Have a great weekend, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah.